Hello and welcome to Sixth Roots Podcast, which recorded live on stage at Roots Americas 2018 in Quito, Ecuador. In this episode, we hear from Javier Suarez, Vice President Network and Fleet Planning at Viva Aerobus, which claims to be the fastest growing low-cost carrier in Mexico.
Viva Aerobus transported about 8 million passengers in 2017, which represents growth of about 30% compared to 2016, with impressive load factors. It also launched 23 new routes, taking its total to 88 routes and 37 destinations.
As you'll hear in this podcast, in 2018, the carrier is looking to add additional destinations in the US to its network, with New York JFK a major target. Javier also discusses the airline's fleet expansion plans, why Viva Aerobus is growing so quickly, and US protectionism policies.
Javier spoke to Roots Americas as part of the conference program, which was sponsored by leading aviation consultancy ASM. Here's the interview, which is conducted by Will Livesey from Flight Global.
Viva Aerobus, it's been interesting just, you know, doing my data digging on DIO, seeing, you know, what's going on with you guys. But, you know, where do you guys fall within the Mexican, Latin American ULCC landscape? I mean, you're growing.
Sure.
Growing
fast. As he said, I mean, in 2017, we grew our passenger number by 29%. We did so by increasing our unit revenue. So that's not an easy task to do. So we're, you know, in summary, we're the fastest growing airline in Mexico, and so far the only profitable airline in Mexico this year. We are the lowest cost airline in the Americas, not only in Mexico, but in the entire Americas region. I mean, if there's any airline with lower cost than ourselves, like we don't know it because they're not reporting their figures yet. You know, our fleet is growing, even though there's some problems in the NEO program, as most of you know. Like, we're still growing a lot. We're expecting to increase our fleet by 9 aircraft this year, assuming like Airbus delivers all of them. Some of our aircrafts will be retiring our fleet, not retiring, but like giving them back to the lessors. But again, like, we're going to continue growing it at least a 20% growth rate in the next years. And you know, we see even though we see a lot of opportunities in America, in Latin America, we're going to continue focusing on Mexico because there's a lot of opportunities for us. You know, Mexico City, as you know, is congested, but like, and like other airlines that are struggling to make routes bypassing the Mexico City hub work, you know, we continue doing it, and you know, we're profitable.
So, low cost, low fare. Obviously, a lot of people claim to be low cost carriers. A lot of carriers claiming they have a lot of low fares. Let me look around the room. Is there competition here, Valeris? No, we'll go ahead. What makes you different from the competition? How are you guys? What are you doing differently?
Okay, you know, like everybody knows, and especially in Latin America, like many airlines talk about, like the opportunity that there is to convert bus passengers into air passengers. You know, as many of you know, like our owner also owns one of the biggest bus companies in the country. So, you know, we're the best positioned airline to take those passengers into our aircraft. We're the only airline in Mexico that is using bus stations and bus shops to sell air tickets. So, like, you know, like we're kind of like converting bus passengers into air passengers more quickly than other airlines. Now, we're doing things differently. You know, everybody talks about aircraft utilization, like, you know, like being efficient, like producing more seats than anybody, but we're the only airline, the only LCC in the world that we know that is capable of producing more than 1,000 seats per aircraft per day. So when we look, I mean, some of it has to do with the stage length, but it's our utilization is super high. I mean, in the old days, Ryanair used to do 25-minute turn. We're still doing 25-minute turn. And, you know, I just checked with you our third quarter figures, and we produce almost 1,300 seats per aircraft per day. And we did that by producing almost 7 sectors per aircraft per day. No other airline we know is capable of doing this. So it's the combination of like very low cost structure, like productivity, and then like the advantage that our parent company is giving us in terms of distribution and capturing passengers from the bus.
A lot of discipline there, like we talked this morning. What would you say the airline's biggest challenges are today?
Well, definitely maintaining our cost structure is a challenge. We know, and we've seen like many airlines that are like startup, like being like super low cost, and as they grow, they believe that, things are going to be easier, and they relax themselves and let their cost increase. That's definitely our biggest challenge. Now, in terms of revenue generation, we definitely need to continue increasing our unit revenue if we want to maintain those double-digit margins that we have. This coming year in Mexico, we have political elections. That's probably going to bring some challenges, but, it can vary the exchange rate, cost of fuel, like a lot of things can happen. But, that's business as usual. And from my experience, I know that, low cost, can go through most of the crisis suffering less than those legacy airlines or other airlines with higher cost.
So on the topic of challenges, and given that my state borders your country, any commentary you can give us on the uncertainty of NAFTA and some of the U.S. border policies? I mean, I'm pretty sure planes can go over a wall, right?
Yeah, well, I used to think of a NAT saying, if you build the wall, we'll fly them all. Yeah. So, that's that could have an impact on airlines, not so much on airlines like ourselves. If you think of our network, we're not so exposed to the U.S., even though it's our largest market. We're flying right now from Guadalajara to Los Angeles, like a big VFR dense route. People will continue flying from the U.S. to Mexico and the way around. If it has an impact in economy, it's likely that people will go and try to find cheaper fares to fly between the countries. So we'll be there to carry those passengers, but we don't see a huge challenge for us, other than the exchange rate and all the stuff that can happen. But we can also prepare for it.
So you're saying there's a chance for Dallas? Okay, I'll read it as that. And I think we talked about this earlier. I mean, you grew revenue 4.7% while actually decreasing cost 4.3% and accelerating growth. What's the magic behind the numbers? I know you elaborated on the utilization and the fact that you guys carry more seats than anybody else. I mean, is there anything else that you can say here? Giving light to that.
Sure. I mean, maintaining our cost down was key. When we started 2017, we faced like a huge challenge in terms of exchange rate. 60% of our cost is US dollar based. The peso went down like crazy, so we thought, okay, well, there is a lot of stuff we need to do on the cost side. We did it very well. And then on the revenue side, I think, I'm trying to, this morning I was trying to think, okay, what are the things that we're doing well? Because if you compare ourselves with the rest of the Mexican carriers, on the revenue side, we're doing a lot better than themselves. And I think the first thing I believe we're doing very well is network planning. A good example of the good job that our network planning director Ruben is doing is that in the last 3 years we've launched 35 routes without canceling anyone. So there is a lot of discipline in the work we do, and that's only talking about the new routes. But if you look into the existing routes, I also think we're doing a great job in that. But that's the basics. I mean, without network planning, there's nothing you can do. The rest of the business will not follow. Now, the magic, I believe, has been done by revenue management, marketing, sales, e-commerce, etc. These guys, we're a very flat organization. If we have a problem in a route, it's not performing as it expected. The revenue management director is going to turn around. He has the marketing director next to him. He's going to say, let's sit down quickly because this is not working well. In less than 30 minutes, we can have a solution. And it's not only having the solution, it's having it implemented, because within the digital world, we now can implement stuff in real time. So that's, I think, one of the things we're doing well. Additionally, in the last 3 years, we've invested a lot in technology. Our teams, revenue management, has great tool for them to manage their inventory. But we're also counting on third-party companies that are way more advanced than airlines, and we're using that technology to increase our unit revenues without increasing our cost. So it's a good talent, being very dynamic, and leveraging technology as much as possible.
Good. I think we're going to switch gears here. Fleets is a big piece of the ULCC business model. Sounds like the, you guys, all Airbus, a lot of focus on density, seat densification, and flying the right planes to the right markets at the right price at the right time. Is there any, do you have any commentary on, you know, maybe mixing that up, any mission-specific aircraft? I know, I think you'd mentioned, we talked about there's a competitor of yours that flies some smaller gauge aircraft. I mean, is there any plans of that in the works?
Sure. I mean, if you think about Viva Airbus, like in recent history, like we were operating a mixed fleet of 737s and 320s, so we went through that transition. I thought it was going to be more complex, but, you know, it has some complexity, but it was somehow okay. But we now realize the benefit of having one fleet only, 320s. You know, it's a lot easier. I mean, if you have to make some changes in the network, you know, you don't need to say, okay, what aircraft did I have deployed on this route or not? Just do it, and it's simple. Now, there, the 321, that aircraft is would allow you to lower your cost and then add capacity on markets that are slot constrained, like Mexico City. So we're looking at 321s, not desperately, because you know, as you know, we're delivering great results with our current fleet. But at a given price, at the right price, we would probably look into 321s. And then, you know, Airbus is continuously adding more and more seats to the 320. You know, if they deliver 190, we'll probably get 190, et cetera, et cetera.
Nice. You know, speaking from a former airport, you know, I spent time trying to lure in ULCCs, and one of the things, pushback I always got was costs, you know. They're called ULCCs for a reason, right? They're ultra low cost. They expect the airport partners to really fall in line with that. You know, what's going on today in Mexico with the airport user fees, and you know, what is there anything that can be done to improve that?
As you're saying, like LCCs, and I would say like legacy airlines too. They, you know, we all love low airport fees. Yeah, the lower the fee, you know, the lower the cost you can offer to your passengers. You know, some of the airports in Mexico, you know, they have higher fees. We would love them to be super efficient and low cost as we are, so that they could lower their fees. This being said, you know, we have a great relationship with them. Most of the airport groups in Mexico like offer us like good incentives when we're launching new routes. You know, but you know, everybody knows like lower fees, like they help us stimulate more traffic, and that traffic, you know, is not only helping the airport like get commercial revenues at the airports, but also has an impact on the regions, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we aim for that. And if there's stuff we can do to help airports be more efficient, you know, we're always there for them. And
I like what you said earlier too about, you know, you haven't pulled back from any of those markets. So I guess it shows that, you know, kudos to your team planning. I mean, you go into markets that you know it's sustainable. So I just found that really fascinating. Mm-hmm. So, and again, I'm not too well versed on the Mexico market. You know, I was always the domestic guy, an American. I'm just trying to understand your customer base. You know, are you seeing a mix of VFR? Are you getting some business that are starting to, I guess, accept the unbundled product? I mean, who's your customer today? Where do you see that customer evolving going down the road?
Okay, we have a very diversified customer base. We have not so many, but we have like business customers flying on us. Like it's not only small companies, there are also like big companies that are working on very challenging environments, and they need to reduce their cost as well. So they find Viva, a great mechanism to lower their traveling expenses. So In the last few years, we've also improved our customer service, and people are more willing to fly on us. You know, in the past, like our fleet was not as new. We had like pretty old 737s. Now they all, I mean, as soon as they jump on our aircraft, all they see is a brand new 320, and they say, you know what, if they're on time, why not choosing them, right? Now that's, I would say, a small percentage of our customers. Now, a big percentage of our customers is VFR passengers. For those passengers, most of them are price sensitive. You know, Viva is the perfect fit. I mean, if you want to fly to Guadalajara for Christmas, you know, the cheapest airline you can choose is Viva. So for those, you know, with the perfect fit, and they again represent a big percentage of our customers. Now, for leisure passengers, I would say there's two kinds of passengers. There's people flying with their families, and what they happen, I mean, what happens to them is that they find real value flying with us, because, you know, especially if you're flying with your family, you know, the cost of traveling to Cancun from Mexico is, it could be like, you know, less than half of flying with a legacy carrier, yeah? So what they see and do is, like, you know, they save a lot of money on their flight, and they can spend a lot more money on their hotels, and that makes for most of the part of their vacations. So, and then there's this other second group of passengers flying for leisure, which are, say, the millennials. For those passengers, I mean, they're not even looking at a legacy airlines. You know, like, sometimes we see legacy airlines, like, lowering their price like crazy. They're not even getting those seats filled because, like, you know, millennials will not even look at them. You know, they're not considered for them. So,
Well, the same trends that the U.S. that we're having.
I guess, you know, it's not only here or in the U.S. It's in, you know, we've seen this in Europe. You know, they see, like, people in general see a lot of value on low fares.
Good stuff. And my apologies for everybody in the room. I'm going to go ahead and steal that question that you're probably wanting to ask at the end. Any thoughts on code shares or alliances? I know there's been some shakeup news with some of your...
Oftentimes we talk about, like, partnerships, like doing code shares with airlines, especially in the U.S. That would definitely bring complexity to the airline. Will we do it one day? Probably yes, but it has to be with the right partner, a partner that is low cost and has a very simple business model like ourselves, so that we do it. But at this point, like, in the very short term, we're not planning on doing it.
So going back to network strategy, again, I was just so amazed how, you know, little change you have in your network. Again, it goes back to your fundamentals and going into markets that you know are going to work. I guess, can you speak to your strategy going forward, where you see untapped markets, whether it's domestic, whether it's incremental flying on what you already have, or whether it's new opportunities in the U.S.? You know, just trying to understand what fits in with your business model, where are you looking to grow, and what can we expect for the future?
Sure. We see a lot of opportunity in the domestic market. In Mexico, there are very few business routes. Most of them are in and out Mexico City. As you all know, like, Mexico City Airport is congested, and it's difficult for us to grow. But unlike other airlines in the country, like, we're capable of, like, bypassing the hub. Like, there's a lot of VFR markets, a lot of leisure markets between, like, Guadalajara and the rest of the country without going to Mexico City. And, you know, we've been launching a lot of these routes successfully, making money. Other airlines are struggling. And, you know, what we've seen in the rest of the world is that these thin markets where the business component is not high, you know, previously, you know, like, regional airlines were successful operating them, like, with daily, double daily. It was, you know, great business because they could, you know, like, raise their fares and make good money. Now, what we've seen in Europe and in the U.S. is those markets that are not, you know, like, business oriented, I mean, they don't have a lot of business passengers, will end up being operated by low-cost carriers. So, you know, a lot of opportunity for us to grow in existing markets, a lot of opportunities for us to jump into new routes nobody else is operating, especially those routes where we see that there is a lot of bus traffic. Again, you know, very focused on domestic, Mexico domestic. Now, as many of you probably know, we've been given slots in Mexico City to operate some U.S. routes. We already started Mexico, Las Vegas last December with a daily frequency. You will soon see us operating Mexico to LAX, a super thick route where there's a lot of VFR traffic. We'll probably do JFK as well. We've been given slots to do it. In essence, like, what makes sense for us internationally are VFR routes or leisure routes where point of sale in Mexico is high, like Mexico, Las Vegas. We're also doing Guadalajara, LAX with daily product, and we actually started, like, Guadalajara, Los Angeles last year. We started with daily, and, you know, like, I think it was, like, in less than 2 weeks, we realized how big that market was, and, you know, and instead of, like, flying daily during Christmas, we increased our frequency to double daily. That was, like, 2 weeks later, two weeks after we announced and loaded our flights. So opportunities there, too.
So it sounds like a robust network and obviously room to grow.
And then Latin America, there's also opportunities, but we want to have a very relevant presence in Mexico before jumping into other countries. Like, we see... We've seen like airlines that have started up in Latin America like last year, and they're already considering opening a new country. You know, I think we're more into, okay, let's get focused. Let's, you know, get Mexico right. And then as soon as we have a relevant presence, then jump into another country. And definitely there's a lot of opportunities, a lot of startups. You know, some of them will make it, some others will not. But you'll probably see Viva in the future more in Latin America.
Awesome. So one of the trends we've been seeing, well, I've been seeing in the States, obviously with the record growth from ULCCs. In fact, I had this impacted a colleague, and I'll tell you a story in a second. It's just the network carriers fighting back by unbundling the product, offering a, for lack of a better word, economy minus. I was actually traveling for work with a colleague, and you know, he, unbeknownst to him, had bought one of those economy minus tickets. Sorry, sir, you can't even take a carry-on. And so are you concerned, you know, seeing this as a tactic by some of the network carriers fighting back with the ULCCs against your model, you know, trying to, I guess, replicate what you're doing, you know, by offering a product that fits in for that low-cost, low-fare-wanting VFR traveler? Are you seeing any response?
I think they're doing a good job trying to tap into those passengers that, you know, like forgot about traveling with them. You know, we're seeing it in Mexico. Like most of the airlines did not used to charge for bags or for like assigned seating or etc. They're doing it. I think they're doing a great job in that sense. Now, you know, the challenge they have is not eroding their unit revenue. If they do that, then perfect. You know, if they increase their total revenue per seat, then, you know, like, well done. Now, the challenge they have and the challenge that is more difficult to tackle into is reducing their cost, you know, dealing with high salaries, like cost structures, et cetera. That's more challenging. But am I concerned? We would love the rest of our competitors to do worse, but not really concerned. And if you look into Mexico, what you see is that legacy airlines and the high-cost airlines are losing their share, and LCCs like ourselves are increasing their share. So, not really concerned, but I appreciate that they're doing a good job, not only here, but in the U.S. and in Europe.
So, back to your network, you know, how do you guys define success? You know, whether it's existing routes today, or what are the expectations for future, if we have some airports in the room here that are wanting service, you know, what's your definition of success? What are the expectations, to make sure that the service stays?
I mean, for us, success is like, like launching a route and start making money in sometimes we've made money from month one. But like, you know, become profitable in the first few months. We're now becoming so picky that even though we've launched a route out of Mexico City like recently, and even though they're making money, we're not even comfortable because we know we could make more money on those routes using those slots to, you know, add additional frequencies on existing routes, on other existing routes. But success for us is, you know, like being profitable like in very short time. Now, having worked for airlines with higher cost, you know, it's great to operate as a network planner. It's great to work for an airline like ourselves, because like having our cost base helps you a lot. You know, it's being profitable with the operating cost of Scandinavian Airlines, to mention like an airline that everybody knows has like super high cost, must be really challenging. In our case, is way easier. Not saying our planning team is not doing a good job, but I'm saying it's easier.
So kind of adding off of that, and then, you know, from my experience at an airport, you know, ULCCs, it was almost like there was an expectation of incentives, whether it was marketing dollars, fee waivers, you know, is that icing on the cake, or is that expected of your airport partners? It sounds like obviously profitability, you know, is number one, but what are you guys looking for?
We were actually having dinner with some colleagues from Legacy Airlines last year, and they were telling us that, the new planning team they have in this Legacy Airline is to come up with incentives, because previously they'd never got an incentive from an airport. And I was telling them that I think I've launched like 500 routes in all my life, and I don't remember anyone that I launched without having an incentive from an airport. And I actually thought of Barcelona Heathrow and I didn't get an incentive for that. But other than that, you know, in most of the routes we launch, we get an incentive. You know, there's some airports, big airports are not allowed to give out incentives, but there are other ways for them to help us. You know, we've been working with Las Vegas International Airport. It's not only their incentive scheme, it's all they do to help us grow, to like help us understand their local market better. I mean, what are the neighborhoods where we can find Mexicans like willing to fly back to Mexico? You know, there's a lot of stuff you can do. It's not only like a US dollar incentive. It's not only about money and marketing resources they can provide you with. It's all the stuff they do for you to feel comfortable launching a route. You know, we've also worked with Auckland. And, you know, they're always there, like, trying to give you as much information as possible. You know, they make you feel comfortable. And you, before launching a route, you know, you can lose a lot of money, you know. And eventually you have to make a choice whether you launch this or that one. You know, you're going to go with the route in which the airport people, you know, they're going to help you if you go into difficulties.
So it's really a partnership.
It is a partnership. Now, like one of the challenges, like we found when I joined Viva, is that like historically Viva Airbus, you know, would open two routes, cancel one. You know, we have a ratio, like a success ratio, like which was really terrible. Like airports did not really believe us. They say, you know, well, you're going to launch it and then you're going to cancel it 3 months later. You know, now like the reality is totally different. As I said, like 35 routes, we haven't canceled anyone. So airports, when we talk to an airport, like they really believe they're there for the long run. And they're more willing to like give you additional incentives because they know that eventually they're going to be making money out of our passengers.
And it's give and take, you know. You're exactly. Not well. It's like my rule in life: I don't pay for friends. So you know, it's authentic. So, I guess folks probably here want to understand your planning process and the horizon. So when they're sitting down with Manuel and team, you know, and having these discussions. You know, what does it look like for your planning horizon? Are you focused on any growth plans for like the next 6 months, or is this more kind of having a dialogue with anybody, you know, just knowing for the long term that you have information on that market?
Well, the most important thing for us is network strategy. If you have defined a compelling network strategy, you know exactly where you go. Again, as we were talking earlier, you know, when we look internationally into the U.S., like we're going to be looking into those routes that are like VFR, those VFR routes or routes where point of sale Mexico is big, et cetera, et cetera. Once we have the network strategy defined, then, you know, we talk to a lot of airports, and, you know, we have, like, I think the team has, like, 39 meetings during this event, but, you know, we would love them to know that, you know, if it doesn't fit with our strategy, then it's very likely that we don't jump into them. Now, the team is currently working on loading November, like, going back to your previous question, like, November will be loaded, you know, very soon, hopefully before the end of this month. We have a 5-year business plan, you know, like, when we look into the 5-year business plan, we don't look into the network exactly, you know, but we do the exercise for 2019, 2020. We have like, you know, the route we believe that fit with our network strategy. Sometimes, you know, we have like a route now in 2019, we believe there's an opportunity, it fits perfectly with our strategy, but then like oftentimes you see that like one of your competitors like jumps in before you do. If there's a lot of overcapacity in a route that, you know, fits with our network strategy, we're gonna wait. I mean, there's a lot more stuff we can do, so it's, you know, we know where we're going, then tactically, within the year, you define what to do and what to postpone.
So kind of building off that question and having been on the other side of the table, you know, this is a lot of data is thrown at you guys, and whether it's passengers per day, fares, mm-hmm. or even something as, you know, beach towels and beach balls sold, you know, mm-hmm. in a particular market, you know, what if you could name two things that you're looking for out of those presentations that kind of sums up, you know, the competitive environment and the opportunity, what is it that you're looking for?
Well, like most of the airports, like, give you like really good information. Like some of them use like SRS, all the stuff that you produce. The data is great, especially when you like, you know, are capable of adjusting like network based on ancillary revenue and all the stuff that was not that simple earlier. But one of the things like some airports do that makes a difference to us is like giving you the real market information. Like some of the airports will say, you know what, like this airline that is operating, you know, they're having doubts about the route because, you know, it doesn't really fit with what they have in mind. That information like will, you know, is is going to probably make you change your mind and jump in first. So it's data as well as market information, strategy. I think one of the airports that I remember was really good at doing this was Amsterdam Airport, Schiphol. They were really good at saying, you know what I believe makes sense for the future in our network is this, so this fits perfectly with you, and kind of like understanding like what the rest of the competitors will end up doing. Because when the team does a business case, like one of the, you know, there's a paragraph in the business case that says possible reaction of our competitors, yeah? You know, that can change like the numbers like completely.
Yep.
So if the airport allows you to better understand like the reaction a competitor can have once you jump in, that's going to make your business case more compelling.
Well, got one last question for you, and then we'll open it up to questions from the audience. Kind of open-ended here. Where do you see the airline in the next few years?
Right, I would love to see Viva being like very similar to what we are right now, and by this I mean like having an airline that has been capable of maintaining our very low cost structure or even reduce it, and then a very dynamic airline that leverages on technology as much as we do now or even more. And, we're definitely going to be a much bigger airline, you know, in the next, like, 3-4 years, we're going to double our size, you know, like, based on our deliveries. But again, you know, I'd like to see an airline that is, you know, like, very similar to what we have right now. If we're totally different, like, we're probably not going to be doing a good job. I mean, if you look into Southwest, you know, they've changed a lot. But, you know, in essence, like, their DNA is very similar to the one they had, like, years ago, yeah? So not changing the business model much. You know, we would love to be the Mexicans' favorite airline, not only for VFR and leisure passengers, but also for business passengers. We're not going to be able to be that kind of airline until the new Mexico City Airport opens up. But I think eventually, you know, that's our goal. And again, once we do our job in Mexico, you know, we would love to see this favorite airline, not only in Mexico, but in other countries. You know, we're talking about like a few years, but, you know, that's our main and our vision.